Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is Tuesday, September 22nd. The fall is here. It feels great outside. It has. It definitely has this year so far. It has not been that hot of a year. That's one, at least one positive about 2020. But hope you and your family you made it through the summer just fine. Obviously, it's been a struggle for many of us this year for many different reasons. But hope it seems like that the year has certainly picked up. It's hard to believe that it's already near the end of September. Going into October, obviously sports are in full swing, so it's an exciting time, and it's nice to have that change of change of scenery, I guess you could say, is not only talking about the weather, but just in terms of the year itself. We want to remind you before we get too much into the show of our title sponsor, BuiltBar.com. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now and put in the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your first or your next order from Built Bar. In today's episode, we're going to start our series of talking with other Locked On hosts with the Grizzlies rivals. We're going to take a look around the NBA at some of the Grizzlies, most well-known rivals, and look at their offseason outlooks, what to expect for them, and how it can relate to the Grizzlies. A lot of the Grizzlies rivals unexpectedly have had more uncertainty added to their offseason with coaching changes and rosters decisions and things like that. So we're going to get started today with Jackson Gatlin from Locked On Rockets. But before we get started with Jackson, do want to remind you, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC. You can also find the podcast wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your phone. Want to also, before we get into our conversation with Jackson, just real quickly want to talk about, obviously, the news from the weekend. The guy that we all have been wanting to know the identity of, the one, as he's become known in Memphis, the gentleman that voted for Zion Williamson in the Rookie of the Year conversation, was revealed to be Joe Calley, a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, obviously out of Chicago. We all had thought it would come out of New Orleans, but when the voters' ballots were revealed on Saturday, we found out it was Joe Calley. Now, here's the thing about it. Obviously, Joe has every right to, make the vote that he has. But the thing about it is that, one of the most eye-opening things about Ja Morant's Rookie of the Year award and in the press conference afterwards was that he had mentioned he would love to know who did not vote for him. As I mentioned, Ja Morant was, in my opinion, he was one of the most obvious choices in recent memory to be a unanimous Rookie of the Year award winner. Obviously, he was not. He was one vote off. He was one of six over the past 20 years, six players, six Rookie of the Year winners who were either unanimous or within one vote of being unanimous. But he was not. A voter voted for Zion Williamson. And he simply wanted to know why. Well, Joe came out and said the reason why was because he felt that Zion Williamson was the most impactful player on the court this season among the rookies. And then also, he felt the Rookie of the Year should be someone that the NBA put so much effort behind when it came to their TV schedules and things such as that before the season was played. Now, there's a lot of flaws in that thought process. There's not a lot of rationale there. And to be quite honest with you, there's not a valid reason out there in which you should vote for anybody else but Ja Morant this season. But the one thing that I think that we did find out through all this is, again, more validation of just how big of a brand Ja currently is and how much potential he has. There were so many people not even related to the Grizzlies who called this writer out for, the reasons behind his voting for Zion Williamson. And that's the thing about it, is that it's so amazing to see how quickly and just how big of a figure and a brand Ja Morant is becoming. From the reaction to, his play in the bubble, to the reaction and support he got for winning Rookie of the Year, and now in finding out who did not vote for him, it's just a reminder of just how lucky we are as Grizzlies fans to have a person as Ja Morant. And it really is amazing to realize that we're only in year one of the experience, and it definitely is going to be a worthwhile experience. We know where the sky's the limit. So just a lot of really awesome things have happened for the Grizzlies over the past few weeks, and it was really fun to see all the support that Ja received over the weekend, and just continuing to grow as a professional, as a player, and as a brand. They're there's just, you know, superstar is a word that started to be thrown around when it comes to Ja Morant. And not only are we talking about on the court, but off the court as well. He certainly has the talent and the persona, you know, to achieve that superstar status one day and is well on his way as we speak. But let's get into the show today, and we are glad again to welcome Jackson Gatlin from Locked On Rockets. I'm proud to have him. Jackson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent, Sean, and I am proud to be here on Locked On Grizzlies. This is my second appearance on Locked On Grizzlies. The last time I was here, I did a quick stop by to discuss the whole Andre Iguodala situation. Unfortunately, I couldn't be as excited about that stop by as I wanted to be, mainly because the Rockets just didn't have a contract or a way to trade for Iguodala that wouldn't ravage their current roster, you know, at the trade deadline this past season. And so I basically had to come in and tell Mark, I was like, you know what? As much as Iguodala would help the Rockets, there's no feasible way to get him. So it was a very short-lived, stint on Locked On Grizzlies. But I'm happy to be back. Happy to talk some NBA hoops with you.
And who would have known at the time? I remember listening to that episode. I came on with Mark in April after the suspension of the season, but I regularly listened before that. And who would have known that in the Andre Iguodala trade, with so much being talked about with him, it was actually Jay Crowder who would be the true difference maker involved in the Iguodala trade for the Heat and their success, you know, so far in the playoffs. Jackson, before we focus on the Rockets, just real quickly, what are your thoughts? The surprising runs of the Heat and the Nuggets. The Heat certainly have a realistic chance to get to the finals. The Nuggets are going to have to get some things going against the Lakers. But just your thought on how the NBA playoffs have gone so far.
I think the one thing we're seeing, I'll start with Nuggets and then go Heat. I think one thing we're seeing with the Nuggets specifically is last year, I think that between last season and this season, Jamal Murray has definitely taken kind of that jump, that next step into maybe not quite superstardom, but just, you know, that next step up in his career, and has been, you know, a phenomenal guy, that pairing with Nikola Jokic, and having, you know, more of that Batman Robin type relationship between those two guys, seeing some of the games, seeing some of the ways that Murray has stepped up throughout these playoffs has just been an absolute treat. And the way that Denver plays, you know, there's so much motion in their offense. There's so much passing. Jokic is such a talented player. It's such a treat to watch him play the game. And just trying to understand how he sees things differently than other guys. Some of these, you know, quick passes that he makes, I haven't even seen the cutter and he's already making the pass. And it's just beautiful basketball to watch. And then on the Miami Heat side of things, their culture, I apologize. Their culture is just absolutely incredible over there. You know, Jimmy Butler fits them like a glove for everything they've been trying to develop down there with Eric Spoelstra, the cast of guys that they have right now. And they are just peaking and meshing at the exact right time. And even though, here's my thing, is even though Jimmy Butler is absolutely the best player down there in Miami, and you know, he is their go-to guy, they're you know, probably the face of that franchise now that he's signed down there, I think Bam Adebayo is absolutely probably the key to the engine, how everything runs so smoothly over there. You know, he anchors them defensively, offensively. They run a lot of their offense through him, and he is such a versatile big. And I'm really hype on what Miami's doing, mainly because it's not quite as, you know, quote unquote, small ball as the Rockets, but Bam is an undersized center. You know, he's 6'8", maybe 6'9" on a good day. You know, he's extremely athletic and he's a big body, so he's not as undersized as, say, PJ Tucker at the five spot. But what Miami's doing, and by extension, what the Celtics are doing, they're running a very versatile starting lineup, and neither of those teams have a traditional big that they play extensive minutes. You know, many of their players are all capable of five out spacing, switching multiple positions. And it's just a really interesting dynamic as a Rockets person to see that playing out over there in the East. And I'm honestly pulling for Miami Heat the rest of the way. I don't know about you, Sean, but I kind of want to see another Heat championship right now.
I'm pulling for the Heat too. I actually had a fellow Locked On host, David Ramil, on the show last week, talked with him about the Heat, you know, the connection with the Grizzlies from this season. And he talked about the culture as well. And a big thing that he brought up was, it's not just, you know, the part of the Heat culture that really, you know, stands out to him is, it's not just the fact that, you know, players know that work has to be done. They see the value in it, but they actually enjoy it. And I see that with the Grizzlies. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I really feel that, you know, hopefully will be a big trait of the Grizzlies as they try to get towards contention. And I think that that's a huge reason why the Heat are so successful. But you know, there's a reason that you're here and why I'm glad that you're here. And that's certainly to talk about the Rockets. And we'll get into specific players and obviously the Mike D'Antoni departure and all that here in just a second. But I do want to talk a little bit about that with you as far as what you said about the versatility of lineups and not going with traditional bigs. Now, under, you know, Daryl Morey, during his, you know, time as the general manager, you know, the Rockets have been very progressive with their style of play, the threes. And now, you know, obviously over the past year, the non-traditional big, you know, starting, you know, a rather small lineup. But, you know, it has had some successes. It has had some weaknesses. But when you look at Miami and you look at Boston and you see that they're not starting traditional bigs and the success that they have, what do you feel is missing from Houston's approach towards that that is working for the Heat and Boston?
I think it's a two-part thing. And so I'll answer the first part, and that's from the standpoint of a non-traditional big, and I kind of spoke about it a little bit briefly a moment ago, but Daniel Tice and Bam Adebayo specifically, the starting fives for those two specific teams, they're not quite as undersized as PJ Tucker would be. And also to the extent those two guys are quite a bit more athletic than PJ Tucker. So Daniel Tice is a guy, and Bam Adebayo as well, they're both guys who can still play, you know, they can provide a little bit of that vertical spacing. They have the ability to play above the rim. That has never been part of PJ Tucker's game. It's not just the fact that he's a bit long in the tooth now at this point in his career. That's not the issue. It's just PJ Tucker's never been an above the rim style player. He is your prototypical 3-and-D wing who has been thrust into the starting five role for the Houston Rockets, mainly because of his ability to be able to defend those bigger, stronger players. Now, offensively, he is limited. And I think that's something that Rockets, you know, fans have become accustomed to is even in this, throughout this Daryl Morey era, you know, focusing on Morey ball, focusing on threes, layups, dunks, and free throws, a lot of Rockets role players throughout this era have been very one-dimensional, or I guess maybe two-dimensional, in the sense that they're pretty much a lot, many of them have been prototypical 3-and-D type guys that can't do much else. You know, watching PJ Tucker or Robert Covington try to put the ball on the floor and create for somebody else or attack the basket is usually a train wreck waiting to happen. And so while Morey should be credited for, you know, being able to being really aggressive in this approach to the style of the game, I think it has limited the Rockets to an extent. And I draw comparisons all the time back to the Mike D'Antoni-led Phoenix Suns. You know, you think back to Steve Nash, Sean Marion. Amari Stoudemire. There we go. I don't know why I'm blanking on Amari's name. Leandro Barbosa, Rajah Bell. You know, so many of those guys were capable of doing more than just being, you know, above average defenders and then standing at the 3-point line and shooting the ball. And that's what made those Phoenix Sun teams so lethal, is because of how versatile they were 1 through 5 on the court at all times. You know, Steve Nash would dribble penetrate and then dish to, you know, Sean Marion, then he would dribble penetrate. Then Stoudemire would have the same ability to handle the ball and create for himself. And all positions 1 through 5 were so unique. And I think the Rockets version with Mike D'Antoni and with Daryl Morey at the helm has kind of gotten away from that. And it's been, yes, they follow the philosophy almost to a fault at times. You know, everybody likes to bring up the 0-for-27 streak against the Warriors, but that's what Chris Paul was meant to do. Chris Paul was meant to come in and kind of break that status quo a little bit and be the guy who, okay, everybody else is going to focus on the Morey ball. Chris Paul is going to do what he does best, which is operate out of the mid-range and orchestrate the offense. And then the Rockets didn't have that for Game 6 or Game 7 against the Warriors. And Russell Westbrook was supposed to be that similar style guy who disrupts the status quo of Morey ball, and we just didn't see a fully healthy Russell Westbrook in the bubble this season, unfortunately.
And the other thing that I'll ask about this, you know, looking at traits of the Final Four teams currently in the NBA, of course, you've got, you know, the Lakers with, you know, two of arguably the top five players in the league, and Anthony Davis and LeBron. But when there is a common characteristic when you look at the Heat, the Celtics, and the Nuggets, it's that, you know, at least two of their most significant players, you know, were developed by that organization. You know, Jaylen Brown and Tatum for Boston, Adebayo and Robinson for the Heat, and then, of course, Jokic and Murray for the Nuggets. Another thing about the Rockets is they're kind of more like the Lakers. They've got the superstar tandem of Westbrook and Harden, and then they've got a lot of role players, like you said, that were one-dimensional, but there hasn't been a lot of development by the Rockets. I know that they typically use their draft picks, you know, as trade pieces more than picks a lot of times. But do you think that's a missing element as well that, you know, could really help them out, is that they have not had the true development, the draft and develop strategy that a lot of these teams that are surprising us now have had success with?
Oh, without a doubt. That's a great point to bring up, Sean. In fact, that's something that I've touched on a little bit already, you know, as we're discussing the head coaching search over at Locked On Rockets is, you know, Mike D'Antoni, and this is kind of an issue, not just that falls on the coaching staff, but also, you know, management and just the organization as a whole. Ever since Mike D'Antoni got to Houston, it's been this, they're pushing this philosophy of it's championship or bust. And it's been championship or bust for four seasons now. And that's very draining on a fan base, on the organization, on the players. And operating that way, going into every season saying championship or bust, we're going to the finals this year. It's difficult. And by extension, because you're constantly in this, you know, almost this vicious cycle of utilizing your draft picks and your younger players to simultaneously try to bring in, you know, talent, kind of, you know, operating at the margins, trying to bring in talent to maintain that those championship aspirations while simultaneously using those draft picks and sometimes certain, you know, younger players that have shown promise to dip below the luxury tax each subsequent season. It's tough. It's a very fine line to walk. And I think first things first is Daryl Morey has done a beautiful job of walking that line by maintaining, by keeping the Rockets in, you know, contention while simultaneously dodging the luxury tax and, you know, utilizing the assets that he did have available to do those things. But now you're looking at a Rockets team that is very depleted of many of its, you know, of its treasure trove of draft picks for the next few seasons, you know, trading two first round picks and two pick swaps for Russell Westbrook alongside Chris Paul before the start of this past season. And they've offloaded many of their young players who have shown promise over the years. And that part's the hard part to stomach because you look at, again, I'm going to use, you know, Miami and the Boston Celtics are great examples of this, of utilizing these younger players and making them legitimate parts of the rotation and relying on them. Now, yes, the rotations tighten up a bit come playoff time, but throughout the season, we've seen both of these teams, you know, utilize very deep benches, and that comes down to the coaching. And that's something that Mike D'Antoni had just shown that he really wasn't willing to do here in Houston. He was so content with his 8 to 9 man rotation all the way through the regular season, all the way into the postseason, never giving much time to the younger guys on the roster to try and give them a chance to flourish. You ask any Rockets fan anywhere what they think about Gary Clark or Isaiah Hartenstein, and they'll tell you that they're very upset that those players are no longer with the organization and how promising that they did look. And had they still been here, those might be two guys that had they continued to get consistent minutes. We saw Gary Clark perform a little bit with the Magic in the bubble, but had those two guys gotten consistent minutes, maybe they could have developed a bit more, been rotational guys, been useful in the situation. You know, Daniel House gets in trouble, gets ejected out of the bubble. Maybe they could have had one of those guys step up to take some of his minutes. Another guy, Damari Carroll, a veteran presence who still couldn't find himself any minutes, even in the absence of Daniel House Jr. So it's been an issue with Mike D'Antoni where he just doesn't have that philosophy of developing younger players, but that may be an issue with how the organization itself was presenting this goal of championship or bust at the start of every season. So I'm not exactly sure who to pin that blame on all the way.
It's quite interesting, you know, with the Grizzlies' success this season, you know, and what we've seen around the NBA, the hope is here that we can certainly develop that trait about us. But I think that you're starting to see the Rockets certainly have been successful, you know, in their style, building around Harden and, you know, using their picks as assets. But that depth that needs to be there a lot of times, it seems like, you know, more than once, it's kind of been a detriment to the Rockets when it mattered in the playoffs more than itself. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back with Jackson and we're going to talk about the coaching search, the biggest headline, obviously, likely for the Rockets this offseason. The fall is officially here, and it's likely that you and your family had a lot of things going on with activities starting to get ramped back up for the fall and winter, kids being back in school, a lot of different places to go, so it's the worst time possible for car trouble to occur. But as we all know, that's exactly when it's likely to happen. But while I can't tell you how to repair your car, I can tell you where you can go to get the auto parts that you need, and that's rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a great source for several reasons. For one, it's easy to use. Within a few clicks of the button, you'll have exactly what you need in a short period of time. It's also likely you're going to find what you need because it's got all the car parts that you could possibly think of for all the makes and models that you could possibly have. No matter your experience with cars, whether you're a do-it-yourselfer, you need someone else to do the repairs for you, or you do car repairs for a living for others, rockauto.com is a great source to have, and it's because it's so cost-effective. It's a family-owned business. They know a lot of times car parts fall outside the budget, so they try to keep the costs as manageable as possible. If you go to rockauto.com right now, let them know that the Locked On Podcast Network sent you. Rockauto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you will ever need. Visit rockauto.com today. So, Jackson, obviously, the big thing about the playoffs, besides what's happened on the court, is it involving, you know, some teams that we didn't expect, that were on the rise, hopefully, but we didn't expect for there to be so many coaching changes. You've got the Pacers with Nate McMillan. You've got, obviously, the Thunder with Billy Donovan. And now you've got the Rockets with Mike D'Antoni. So take us through that with what you know a little bit. Was it expected? I know there had kind of been rumors, especially after Indiana. It had come out Indiana maybe focused on D'Antoni. But how unexpected was this? And do you feel it's a positive or a negative going forward that D'Antoni is no longer with the Rockets?
It's tough because when you look at the organization, you know, kind of like a, you know, 10,000 foot view, just looking down on things, the Rockets have a really great thing or had a really great thing going for them, where from executive and general manager Daryl Morey to head coach and Mike D'Antoni to star player and James Harden, they all bought into the same system. They all truly believed in what they were doing, in the approach to the game, and they all completely bought in. That is a very rare thing to find in this day in the NBA, where you have that much alignment from top to bottom in an organization. And in a way, it may have been too much alignment. It may have been a bit too detrimental. And I mentioned earlier how Chris Paul was supposed to be that guy that kind of challenged the status quo a little bit. And he was. He was the guy that challenged the status quo a little bit, to the point where it bugged James Harden enough to, you know, the running theory is that James Harden essentially ran Chris Paul out of town. And, you know, when Russell Westbrook became available in a trade, James said to ownership, go get my guy. I want to play with him. I don't want to play with Chris. I fully believe had Russell Westbrook not been made available this past offseason, going into the 2019-2020 season, the Rockets absolutely would have run it back with Chris Paul. Now, would they have gotten this version, this refreshed, you know, reinvigorated version of Chris Paul? That I don't know, because, you know, I still believe spite was a very powerful motivator in his bounce back season, you know, being told, hey, you're washed, we're getting you out of here, we need a guy who can actually contribute to a championship team. That must have hurt his ego quite a bit. So I'm sure that was some, you know, fuel to the fire to, you know, have him want to come back even better than before. But as far as the organizational kind of belief system, you know, thinking about the next head coach, you know, as far as where things kind of went wrong with MDA, it's not necessarily that things went wrong. It's just they hit their ceiling. You know, they had the franchise best 65 wins in 2017-2018. They came back next season, you know, a little bit underperformed to start the year. James Harden had to go on his unguardable tour, and things just didn't quite pan out the way they wanted them to, and then had a kind of a disappointing second round loss against the exact same Golden State Warriors, minus Kevin Durant this time for game 6, which is obviously really painful there. And then they run it back another season, Mike D'Antoni's final season, and there were the issues before the season talking about his contract extension and ownership not being able to hammer out a new deal with him, and that was kind of a big storyline this past summer. And so things were just a bit rocky with that relationship from the get-go. But looking at things with the Rockets, the way they're locked into Russ, Harden, Eric Gordon, Tucker, Covington, they've got their core of players locked up, and it's really going to be hard to find any ways to improve upon that roster significantly. So the only place remaining where you could actually try and find a level of improvement would be coaching, right? So you swap out Mike D'Antoni, you bring in a coach who maybe does challenge the status quo a little bit more, maybe somebody who doesn't buy completely into this system, because what we saw this past playoffs was very reminiscent of the 2017 playoffs for the Rockets when they went up against the Spurs, the series that a lot of people like to pull out when they talk about James Harden as a choke artist, because he disappeared in that game 6 where the Spurs didn't even have Kawhi playing. Is the Spurs used a defensive scheme where they ran out to the three-point line, they took away the three-point line by closing out hard on three-point shooters, and they dropped their bigs back into the paint and forced the Rockets to either go, you know, drive all the way into the teeth of the Spurs defense or take that mid-range that was available to them, because that was what the Spurs were conceding, knowing that the Rockets wouldn't take those shots. And it happened exactly again against the Los Angeles Lakers. Only this time, James Harden has developed so much in his game that they were still forced to double team James Harden at times, using those flash doubles, you know, those late shot clock doubles to get him out of his rhythm. And the Lakers did the exact same thing, though. They dropped Anthony Davis way back into the paint, and they conceded that mid-range area, and the Rockets still weren't taking those shots. And so I would like to see a coach, whoever the next head coach is of the Rockets, to understand that there's a huge area of the court that is simply being ignored right now, and other teams are able to expose that. And we're seeing teams like the Miami Heat, for example, who are just as analytically focused as the Houston Rockets are, but they don't ignore that entire chunk of the court. They take the best shot available on any given possession, and even if that means they're focused on layups, dunks, and three-pointers, sure, but they don't ignore that chunk of the court. And so that's really what I'm hoping for out of the next head coach for the Houston Rockets.
So it seems development, focusing a little bit of a different viewpoint. You had mentioned, obviously, you know, Chris Paul's ability, you know, that we know that as Grizzlies fans, from how he just could never miss in that basically that 7 to 17 foot range during the Clippers and Grizzlies playoff series. But you mentioned a coach that, you know, probably could focus more on the mid-range game. So a different philosophy in terms of the system that, you know, Harden and Morey have made famous. But another thing, it seems like we talked about earlier, you know, yes, you had mentioned, I was going to bring it up, that the Rockets starting lineup plus Daniel House, it seems like their starting lineup plus one of their main bench guys, those guys are locked in for next season. But they're also seeing they potentially could lose a lot of their bench. Coming from a Grizzlies perspective, where we saw the bench really supported, the bench was a big reason why we had so much success. How important is it for you to find a coach who can develop the roster, but also can add needed assets to give the Rockets more depth going forward? Because it seems like depth, especially in the Heat's case, it seems like depth is another big attribute for teams to go further than they may expect to go.
Oh, absolutely. You know, another excellent point, Sean. And, I will counter with, apparently sometimes you can have a little bit too much depth. And I'm looking at you, Mike Budenholzer, you know, playing Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, 32 minutes a game in the playoffs. No, but not from a joking standpoint. No, absolutely. You know, I've never been able to wrap my mind around the idea of, you know, running 9, maybe 10 man rotations throughout the regular season when you've got this grueling 82 game schedule. And I want to plug this really quick because I want to earn a little bit of favor with some Grizzlies fans. One, I love watching the Grizzlies play. I think Ja Morant is an absolute delight to watch play the game of basketball. He's so exciting. I try to, whenever I can, tune into Grizzlies games when they don't conflict with the Rockets schedule. And on top of that, months ago, back in the middle of the hiatus, I did one of my earlier episodes. I did a Trash Talk Tuesday episode where I, in the third segment of the pod, I trash talked 28 NBA teams. The two teams that I did not trash talk, obviously the Houston Rockets, and the only other team that I didn't trash talk, I got to the Grizzlies, and I had something lined up for it, but I said, you know what? Never mind. I'm not going to trash talk the Grizzlies because I like watching Ja Morant play too much. So I didn't do that. Grizzlies are absolutely,
we appreciate that.
Such an exciting team. I just, you know, all top to bottom, really love the Grizzlies. So I just wanted to earn a little bit of favor there, but, that is a culture shift, and that's not just from coaching, right? That is an organizational directive where it's okay. Are we prioritizing, you know, intermingling some of this youth into our lineup and kind of developing them while still simultaneously being, you know, fringe contenders or legitimate championship contenders? And that's what we're seeing out of so many of these organizations. They are prioritizing a culture where they're able to bring in young guys who are difference makers right away. Look at Tyler Herro. Now, I know it's Tyler Herro and he's a lottery pick and it's a little bit different with a guy like that, but still he is a young guy who is being trusted in the biggest moments of his career as a rookie. And he's getting it done because he's got that confidence from the organization, from Eric Spoelstra himself, from the rest of the coaching staff to be able to be out there. And yeah, he's going to make a mistake or two occasionally. You know, I remember it was, what was it? I think it was in game seven against the Raptors or it had to have been game one then. Harrell made a mistake. He was careening out of bounds and like threw the ball back in under his basket or something. And it led to 2 points. And it's, you know, it's one of those mistakes where if I'm watching it as a Rockets, you know, Rockets person and thinking, okay, Mike D'Antoni's going to pull this rookie, you know, no, it's Eric Spoelstra, you know, he pulls him aside. He's like, hey, don't do this next time. You know, don't make that mistake. Next time, just let the ball go out of bounds. Whatever. It's those teachable moments that young players don't get unless you trust them to be on the court for a little bit and make those mistakes out there. It's one thing to be in practice and for a coach to see what they're putting up in practice and to be coaching them there. It's a whole nother game to be out there on an actual NBA court playing against legitimate other NBA competition and having those real moments, you know, in front of thousands, you know, tens of thousands of watching eyes, especially in the biggest moments, like in the playoffs, to be able to make those mistakes and still have the confidence of the vote of confidence from your coach to continue being out there on the court. And that's absolutely a culture thing, top to bottom, that many teams in the NBA have that the Rockets haven't had for the past few years.
And so it brings me to this simple question then, Jackson, in terms of what you're hearing, in terms of who you realistically could see coming to the Rockets. I mean, that's the big thing about the Grizzlies. You know, I mentioned before on this podcast during, you know, kind of, you know, some of the offseason shows that, you know, the Grizzlies' chances of making the playoffs next year, there may not be as strong because of the fact that external things, there are going to be more teams that, you know, are going to be healthy and, you know, are just more talented right now. But there are these unexpected coaching openings that have happened that could significantly impact the teams. So with the not to put you on the spot, but a name or two who you ideally would really like to see, a realistic name or two that you would like to see take over the Rockets going forward.
You know, there have been a couple names that have been kind of linked, and just to throw a few out there. So I'll throw a few names out there and then I'll kind of just circle back on them. So Sam Cassell, assistant coach with the Clippers, Tyronn Lue, assistant coach with the Clippers, former head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, won his chip with LeBron James there. Steven Silas from the Dallas Mavericks, Alvin Gentry, actually, you know, former head coach of the Pelicans, and then Jeff Van Gundy. And so there's just a few names thrown out there. Oh, and I'll throw in another one, Kenny Atkinson. And so I've mentioned, you know, potentially there being a bit too much alignment top to bottom in the Rockets organization. And I think when you look at a couple of guys like Silas or Atkinson or Gentry, possibly if he's, you know, up for another head coaching role, those three guys might have a bit too much alignment and be too similar to Mike D'Antoni in style and philosophy. Whereas any one of those three guys as a like lead assistant on a team where the head coach is potentially, again, a guy like Sam Cassell or Ty Lue or Jeff Van Gundy, if he wants to make a return to NBA head coaching, those would be kind of guys who got, I feel like, would go against the grain a little bit of the full blown Morey Ball mantra that the Rockets have had for, you know, the better part of a decade now. And specifically these past 4 years with Mike D'Antoni, a guy who really encompassed all those ideals as well. And just to point out, Steven Silas was actually a lead candidate for the Rockets back in 2016, when ultimately Leslie Alexander, the then owner at the time, decided he wanted Mike D'Antoni. So, you know, the owner got his way. Mike D'Antoni was the coach. And then fast forward 4 years, here we are. But now Tillman Fertitta is, you know, is the owner of the Rockets. Daryl Morey is still around. So I think Steven Silas might make a strong push there. But to me, it feels like bringing in one of those three names, either Sam Cassell, Jeff Van Gundy, or Ty Lue, bringing in one of those guys who might go against the grain a little bit, might have a bit better, you know, kind of in-game management of the team as far as substitutions, timeouts, things like that. Just kind of the little in-game chess match against, you know, coach to coach that goes on, especially in the high-pressure playoff games. And then maybe one of those other candidates as a lead assistant, to me, sounds like a really strong duo. And it's almost, I like to bring back the duo of Mike D'Antoni and Jeff Bozelic from a couple years ago, who, you know, Mike D'Antoni, obviously a very offensive-minded philosophy, offensive-minded coach, and then having his lead assistant be a guy who is a defensive guru led to a really great balance between the two. So I feel like bringing in somebody as the head coach who can be a bit more defensive-minded, try to really instill that side of the game into this roster. And the biggest thing past just stylistic changes, you know, but between Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets' next head coach is going to be the biggest question, is small ball here to stay? Will whoever is brought in as the new head coach of the Rockets be okay with rolling out 6'5 PJ Tucker at the center spot Or will they want the Rockets to use some portion of their MLE or execute a trade in some capacity to bring in a legitimate big? And I say legitimate big, I mean somebody who can, you know, come in with a little bit of size, you know, 6'9", 6'10", and actually, you know, be not, again, it doesn't have to be somebody who is a defensive anchor, but just somebody who plays a bit more of a traditional role, at least defensively, for the Houston Rockets. Because offensively, I think the proof is in the pudding. They need a five who can still space the court and still, you know, extend defenses out to the three-point line, as long as Russell Westbrook is a member of the Rockets. Because he essentially, Russell Westbrook is your offensively, he's your center. He is your guy who should be operating near the basket or out of the post pretty much every possession that he's operating offensively. And if you plug in another guy who is a non-shooter, we'll see exactly what we saw with the Rockets in the first half of their season with Clint Capella before they traded him for Robert Covington, which was a lack of spacing and just a very disjointed offense overall. And the only reason Russell Westbrook was able to flourish in January and February in Rockets red was because they converted to small ball officially, which, you know, small ball, it happens to be small because PJ Tucker is 6'5", but essentially it's just a five out offense, which is what we're seeing from the Miami Heat, which is what we're seeing from the Boston Celtics and many other teams in the NBA, guys who can stretch all the way out, you know, all five positions to the 3-point line, which allows so much more driving room for guards or ability to operate out of the post for bigs. And it's just a much more lethal style of offense.
So in other words, you're going to give a max contract to Myers Leonard this offseason.
Yeah, let's do it. I can't ever hear the name Myers Leonard without thinking of replacing the E's in his name with the threes, because that, like on r/NBA on Reddit, like that's just the joke, is anytime somebody brings up Myers Leonard, it's just, you see his name with all the threes lined up in it. I cannot get past that. So yeah, Myers Leonard for the Rockets this summer. No, not really, but
we're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we're going to wrap the show up with Jackson, talk a little bit about the duo that is there for a while in James Harden and Russell Westbrook. I feel one thing that all of us can agree on is that we would love to add small, healthy activities or behaviors to each of our days. It's just hard to do with the stress and rigors of everyday life, especially this year. But I have a solution that I feel could make some sense, and that's Built Bar. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Now, the thing about it with protein bars is that typically you have to trade one for the other. If it tastes great, it's probably not healthy, and if it's healthy, it probably doesn't taste great. Well, Built Bar literally achieves both goals, and it's also very versatile. You could have it in the morning for breakfast, you can have it before or after a workout, or as an afternoon snack, even as a nice delicacy while you're listening to your favorite podcast network or Locked On Podcast Network show. And the great thing about Built Bar is that it comes with a wide assortment of flavors. My favorite is peanut butter, but if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you would be able to find the flavor that you like, and I feel that you would find one that you'd be able to stick with. Another great thing about Built Bar and Locked On is that if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and you put in the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your next order. But I can tell you this with confidence. If you order from Built Bar, even if it's your first time or it's the first time in a long time, it's not going to be the last. I feel it's going to be a common, everyday part of your routine from this point on once you taste it and enjoy the different flavors that are at BuiltBar.com. Again, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, put in the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your next order from Built Bar. So, Jackson, wrapping up the show today, obviously want to focus on Westbrook and Harden. Now, you mentioned it yourself. You know, with Chris Paul on the court, it seems like that there was the perfect combination of skill sets that really provided the depth that was needed for the Rockets. I mean, let's just be honest. The Rockets probably are the most standout form of irony that we've seen in the NBA in recent memory. A team that has been a trailblazer in terms of relying on the three. That's the reason why they did not make the finals, was because of that 0-for-27 streak. You know, nobody could have planned on that. But that commitment to the three now is going to be, you know, harder to do with so much money owed to Russell Westbrook, who just, the three ball is not part of his game, or at least an effective part of his game. But you've got about $130 million owed to both Harden and Westbrook for over the next 3 years. What about their combination? When the Rockets were playing at their best, what stood out about that combination, and what needs to improve on both Westbrook and Harden's end for them to hopefully take that next step, or at least have a better chance to take that next step?
This is the one that kind of lends itself to that idea of a bit of a philosophy change for the Rockets. And ultimately, this is going to fall on the shoulders of one James Harden. And this is the hard part to stomach, is does he have this change in him? I think it's apparent, you know, that the Rockets would be at their best if the ball was taken out of James Harden's hands and put more in Russell Westbrook's hands. And simply because Stan Van Gundy did an excellent job highlighting this in the broadcast that he covered for the Rockets throughout the playoffs, as well as he talked about it in a recent pod with Zach Lowe, but discussing the fact that when James Harden relinquishes the basketball, all he does is stand around at the near the half court line as an outlet. So he hangs out and he waits for the Rockets to attempt to, you know, create something without his help. And Stan Van Gundy compared it to Steph Curry, whereas, yes, Steph Curry has just as much, you know, gravity as James Harden. And you could maybe even make the argument that James Harden might even have more gravity than Steph Curry. Either way, they both provide an immense amount of gravity offensively where teams cannot lose them or they're going to, you know, pay the price. But the difference is that when Steph Curry doesn't have the ball, he actively runs off of screens. He's actively drawing defenses around the court. And not only that, but he's also doing things off ball, setting screens for his teammates. And he's still a part of the offense, even when the ball isn't in his hands. Now, I'm not asking, and nobody's asking, James Harden to go running off of screens for, you know, 24 minutes a game. That's not his style of basketball. He is still most effective when the ball is in his hands. However, because of the way that the Rockets stagger Russell Westbrook and James Harden in the game, there are still plenty of possessions for James Harden to get his, quote unquote, and to have the ball in his hands and play, you know, the style of basketball that he's, you know, this ISO heavy style that he's become so accustomed to and has excelled at over the past couple of seasons. So that's still a possibility. But in the minutes where it's James Harden and Russell Westbrook out there on the court, what makes more sense to you if I present this opportunity, right? James Harden with the ball in his hands and a defender sagging completely off of Westbrook, so much so that they're basically shading Harden one direction on the court, or vice versa. Russell Westbrook with the ball, yes, the defender gets to sag off of him a little bit, but still has to be kind of, you know, guarding Russ and keeping him honest. And then James Harden off on the wing with a defender glued to his hip, providing much more spacing offensively. Which one sounds a bit more enticing to you?
The latter.
Yeah. And that's one thing that we've just never really seen it with James in the on the wing or in the slot or even down low in a, you know, in a corner somewhere. We don't really see that. We see all these plays, you know, drafted up with the intent to get the ball back to James Harden and either him going downhill or screen set for him to create, driving to the rim, and defenses are able to game plan for that. They're able to sniff that out. And because Russell Westbrook is a non-shooter, you know, LA was able to basically give him the Lou Dort treatment by ignoring him on the three-point line. So ultimately, the biggest change that needs to happen for this duo to work is for James Harden to be willing to operate off ball a bit more to allow Russ the time on ball. And then slightly an extension of that is Russ needs to be the version of himself that we saw in January and February, which there are some people who have given up on the Russell Westbrook experiment. There are some people like, just ship him to New York, just get back assets for him. You know, it's not going to work. Russ and James can never work. They don't complement each other. That's true. They do not complement each other nearly as well as Chris Paul and James Harden did. But I'm a firm believer at the end of the day, and many people are, that in the NBA specifically, talent trumps fit. And with Russ specifically, his floor is a lot lower than the floor, Russ and Harden's floor is lower than Harden and CP3, but their ceiling is a significantly greater because Russ's ceiling as a player is MVP caliber. Now you can make a bit of an argument for CP3 and his bounce back year that, you know, he comes in seventh in MVP voting, that Chris Paul was almost right there. But at the time of the trade, nobody could have guessed that Chris Paul was going to have this much of a resurgent season. And even then, Chris Paul's ability to take over a game on a, you know, almost nightly basis still isn't, I would still put more faith in Russ to be able to have those explosive evenings to be the engine of the offense, essentially, when maybe James Harden just doesn't have it on a given night. And the reason he was so successful in January and February was because he was playing the most efficient version of basketball that he'd ever played in that career. He completely eliminated the threes. He was minimizing his turnovers. He was operating out of the post, abusing smaller guards, getting to the rim at will. And we just didn't get to see that version of him inside the bubble because, and I'm not making excuses for him, but he was dealing with some stuff. You know, he was diagnosed with COVID, had to overcome that. plays two or three bubble games and then has the quad injury, has to deal with that, get that rehabbed. And for a guy who relies on his, you know, explosiveness, his athleticism as much as he does, you know, very similar to, in a way, to Ja Morant a little bit. You know, if you're only at 80% instead of 100%, you know, for a guy who is so used to, you know, operating at 110% at all times on the court, suddenly that's going to affect his game a little bit and his comfortability and his effectiveness on the court. And so we just never got to see the right version of Russ in the playoffs next to James Harden.
And the last thing that I'll bring to light as far as that the combo goes is, you know, you mentioned it quite a bit during this episode about the philosophy change, especially on Harden's end. You know, we talked about, you know, off the ball, perhaps, you know, we talked about, you know, obviously the personalities there seem to gel better than Harden and other players that have been with him. But the one other thing that I will bring light to is, you know, talking about where Harden and Westbrook are in their careers. Harden's 31, Westbrook is going to turn 32 later this year. They have a lot of miles on their bodies, and they also, and it comes from their mindset, both have talked about the fact that they don't want to sit, they don't want to take, you know, days off, they want to play, which makes sense. That's part of their mentality. But at the ages that they are, and the fact that the Rockets have so much invested in them, and the fact that they've just, like I say, they've played much more minutes than your average NBA player would, do you feel it also makes sense? Is it time to start potentially talking with them about load management? I know that, you know, you want to honor what they want to do, but we've seen that type of style, that philosophy work for other players. The other players have been fresh in the playoffs, whereas you saw with the Rockets, Westbrook was not. He was hurt. But with load management now, you know, becoming more of a trend in the NBA, do you feel it makes sense, and can it become a part of the Rockets' approach to make sure Harden and Westbrook are as fresh as possible during future postseasons?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Sean, because they actually did already, you know, instigate that load management approach with Russell Westbrook this past season, which is why it was so absurd that he did still wind up, you know, hurting his quad. Now, I think that's more attributed to the fact that, you know, the 4-month hiatus, the layoff, and then the immediate jump back into the action. It's one of those, you know, kind of soft tissue injuries that people were worried about popping up across, you know, many NBA players as the action resumed. And but throughout the regular season, Russell Westbrook never played two games out of a back-to-back. He would always rest one of those two games. And this was actually a topic of contention throughout the season because Chris Paul played every single game for the Thunder this year. And meanwhile, Russell Westbrook, you know, was sitting out back-to-backs and then also missed, you know, the first four games of the playoffs. So not only was, you know, Chris Paul having a resurgent year, he was also more healthy than Russell Westbrook, which was one of the biggest reasons that you traded Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook, was simply because Chris Paul had been hurt, you know, and missed about 20 to 25% of his games in back-to-back seasons in his 2 years here in Houston. And so you trade for another verifiable Iron Man in Russell Westbrook, similarly to James Harden, a guy who missed, you know, very few games throughout his career, unless it was for, you know, a legitimate injury, you know, a guy who's basically been an Iron Man more or less. And suddenly he comes to Houston and he starts missing games. And so maybe Houston is the common denominator here between these players. No, I kid, but I think it's just a stroke of bad luck more than anything regarding that. But I do think that moving forward, you know, with their respective ages, as you mentioned, 32 for Russ, you know, before the start of this next season, James Harden, 31 years of age, they absolutely need to consider, you know, dialing it back a little bit. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't necessarily have to be missing entire games, you know, as a form of load management, but just having a coach that understands, you know, to ride his players only, you know, give them 32 to 34 minutes a night, right? Don't push them into the 40s just for, you know, an early overtime win, you know, early in the season or something. Just, you know, have some ability to navigate, to not rely so heavily on your stars. And I think that's a big one too for whoever comes in as the new head coach of the Rockets. It would be very refreshing to see a coach that has an offensive system that doesn't fall apart at the wheels when one of the two stars aren't present, because the way the Mike D'Antoni system worked for 4 years in a row here in Houston, and that first year was a bit difficult because it was just James Harden, but for 2 years with Chris Paul and then for this past season with Russell Westbrook, it's either James Harden or Russell Westbrook running the show for the entire 48 minutes. And when there's stretches of the game where one of those guys isn't available and it's just, you know, Eric Gordon or Austin Rivers or whoever else, you know, being the primary ball handler, the offense looks a bit shaky. And that to me is an indictment on the coaching system and the philosophy and the, you know, just the directive from the coach himself, because a system shouldn't rely so heavily on one or two players to make it work. A system should be in place for the team to succeed, and a star player should simply just be the tip of the spear for that system. So obviously the system can revolve around Russ and James being the two best players, but it shouldn't suddenly falter when Eric Gordon is put into that role, or Austin Rivers of being the primary ball handler. There should still be plays and a system in place to allow the team as a whole to succeed in the absence of their stars. And we're seeing that from some of the other teams in this league, you know, where on any given night, it's kind of a next man up mentality where, like, think about, I mean, I feel like you could point to, you know, any of the teams in many of the teams in the West, I should say, where, you know, maybe a star player gets in foul trouble a little bit and things don't fall apart at the seams, right? They're still able to, you know, orchestrate their offense and still able to score, put points on the board, still able to defend. Whereas the Rockets, it feels like as soon as they lose one of Russ or James Harden, notably the overtime game in the first round against the Thunder, where James Harden fouled out immediately and then things just derailed immediately. After James Harden picked up his sixth foul, the Rockets looked horrible. And that's because they just look bad when the ball isn't in his hands or in Russell Westbrook's hands. At that point, Russ wasn't available yet. So that's a big point for me with the next head coach, is having a system that can allow their stars to rest a little bit and potentially even miss a game or here, you know, here or there, right? Have those load management games where maybe they do rest on back-to-backs, but still have a team that can go out there and still play a competitive game of basketball in the absence of one of their stars.
The thing about it is this, is in my opinion, at the end of the day, this is why I was looking so forward to talking to you, Jackson, is that, yes, you know, the thing about it is with Houston, you know, there are several things you could point at that could be better. There are several things that you could point at that, you know, could be a bit uncertain. But at the end of the day, you can look at their contracts as being a detriment or whatever it may be. At the end of the day, even in their 30s, when you have James Harden and you have Russell Westbrook, you're a threat against any opponent that you play, and especially with the Grizzlies who are up and coming, the Rockets are going to consistently be a threat. So, you know, that's a ton to work with on the Rockets end, but between Harden and Westbrook, you know, we'll see what happens. Hopefully the Grizzlies will continue to be competitive with them as time goes on. Jackson, before we head out for this show, do want to ask, just let our fans know where they can find you. You know, the thing about Memphis is that, you know, we do love our Grizzlies, but in general, Memphis loves basketball, and they especially love, you know, big names, obviously, you know, in the NBA. Where can we find your work to learn more about the Rockets, especially with the coaching search going on, and how can Grizzlies fans stay in touch with you in terms of what you've got coming up in the future?
Absolutely. Well, here, I will drop in one more. I want to earn a little bit more favor as we get out of here before I drop my tags. But, looking at the Southwest Division, right? James Harden and Russell Westbrook, they've got, you know, about 1 to 2 more years of their window of championship contention, where they're probably going to be kind of, you know, the Rockets are probably going to be the top dog in the Southwest. The Spurs are going through a rebuild and don't have, you know, a big name at the forefront of that rebuild like the Mavericks or like the Grizzlies or like the Pelicans do. But when it comes, and I think based on how we saw the Mavericks play this year, I think they're probably the fastest up and coming team out of the Southwest Division. Agreed. And probably going to be, you know, very much in the playoff hunt next year. But between the Grizzlies and between the Pelicans, I'm actually a bit more high on the Grizzlies. I really like the Grizzlies' future. I think that Ja Morant is a very special talent, and you know, in the coming years, when the Rockets slowly drop into their rebuild mode, I am absolutely going to be kind of shadow stalking the Grizzlies as my favorite team to watch them. Hopefully, derail the Dallas Mavericks and any other team in the West that is attempting to bring a title back to their city. I would love to see, you know, the Grizzlies succeed with Ja Morant and that just plethora of young, exciting talent going on over there. So I just wanted to drop that in there really quickly. You know, basically, Zion who? I don't care about Zion. I care about Ja. And I'm excited that he won Rookie of the Year, and I'm excited to see what the Grizzlies can do moving forward. So I just wanted to get that in there. Now, as far as just tracking me down, I do all my stuff on Twitter. So you can find my personal handle on Twitter, which is where I put all my content out at JT Gatlin. And then of course there's the show Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And then I also run a Houston basketball blog called Clutch City Control Room. And the at for that is at Clutch City CR. So you can check me out at any of those three places.
His name is Jackson Gatlin. Wonderful insight. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Jackson. Please hold on after the show for just a moment. Folks, that'll do it for us here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Remember, you can find me at StatsSAC on Twitter, the show at Locked On Grizz, and you can find the podcast anywhere podcasts are available. Until next time, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.